Tonight, not so much going over what is permaculture. I'll scream if I hear that question. Or can you define permaculture for me? As saying where we've come from and where perhaps we're going in this particular movement and in associated movements. In 1975, we framed up the idea of permaculture, so this year it's 10 years since the concept arose, and we gave a single program in the ABC and gave our address and got 9,000 letters, so we never did that again. Cost us $700 and three people for a fortnight to answer those letters, many of which we couldn't even open and read because 9,000 letters is just too many letters. And what we had articulated or framed out was something that was in a lot of people's minds, that we have to evolve. We have never evolved a sustainable agricultural system, something which relies on the energy within the system, something that doesn't destroy soils. It was a proposal in 75, and we didn't write the books that are outside until 1978 and 1979. And as soon as those books came out, they've sold about close to 100,000 copies in Australia. People everywhere in gardens and on small farms and on some larger farms started to try out some of the ideas. And I guess I could say there were thousands of modest trials of some of the designs and proposals. And that would have commenced only 5 to 6 years ago. And travelling around this year, around some of the people who started in those days, we have both commercial properties and what seem to be obviously sustainable small systems scattered throughout the world. I didn't dare to teach design until 1980, when I had designed and worked with people on about 300 small properties, because there hadn't been any such integrated design system taught. It doesn't fit into any fixed discipline. Permaculture is the linking system between disciplines. It has something to say about geography, geology, horticulture, and a lot to say about water and its conservation. And then it also has tackled the problem of the legal ways in which land can be owned and shared, and more recently, how people in small groups can raise the capital and develop enterprises. So it's not economics, it's not agriculture, it combines all of these into what is a fairly homogeneous system. I guess there are now 1,000 graduates out in the world. Actually, it was 947 when I last looked. But I guess with this course and one just completed in Queensland, it would be about 1,000. On another one in Alice Springs. We are an institute. We are a properly constituted teaching institute. And we offer diploma courses, and after people have worked for 2 years in any of 8 or 10 fields, we issue diplomas, and we've issued 240 diplomas for people who've put in 2 years' hard work since their courses. So that's sort of 500 man years, man and woman years, because about half our graduates are women. They do a disproportionate amount of work, I think, actually. So we've had a lot of experience in. Was I founded, and I've been a member of organic gardening societies for many years, so the whole system's organic. I originally founded the Tasmanian Organic Gardening and Farming Club, but that is a technique. Often these clubs turn into small, self-congratulatory, rather, and they age quickly because they don't grasp the opportunities to organise capital in society to get done what they have to get done. And the present state of the world is that a lot of people have immune response problems, some very severe. There's a lot of people with cancer or becoming very ill who are advised by their doctors to avoid artificial chemicals and foods and to eat nothing but organic products, and they can't find them because there are no large organic markets, there's no funding for those systems, there's no advice available on them on the broad scale, and banks generally will not lend for that sort of development. In fact, largely, the banks are foreclosing on West Australian farmers unless they use pesticides and herbicides. So, in a sense, the banks force on farmers the use of superphosphate, whether the farmer wants to use it or not, and they also force the use of chemicals. And that's exactly the same for the seed companies. While we were setting up the permaculture system, about four companies, ICI, Ciba Geigy, IT&T, a couple of others, Shell Company, quietly took over the whole of the world's seed supply. They bought out all seedsmen of any note and proceeded to patent seed, and they hold the patents to most of the seed patented. That is, they hold 100% of the patents on soya beans and about 80% of the patents on food cereals. This largely went unnoticed and unopposed by the people of most countries. We've seen a 400% rise since that time in the price of seed. Instead of being a relatively minor part of farm and garden costs, it's become a large part. So that happened without protest from the Australian public, and indeed from the public of any country. And the consequence of that is that only four companies now really control the whole of the food supply of the world. So it's now a question of elect who you like. There are only four or five groups of people who you don't elect who say whether you can eat or not. And your own government, the Australian government, is again trying to introduce plant variety rights legislation, not to protect the rose grower, but to put the whole of Australia's seeds into the hand of one of these four people who already own the companies. It now enables them, if you like, to patent our food plants. There are only 20 plants produced in agriculture in any quantity, and all of these plants are largely owned by one or other of those companies. In the United States, if you buy a little fruit tree, it has a tag on it that says, if you take a bud or a cutting off this tree and sell it, you'll be fined $800. So the basic foods of the society are owned by a few oil companies, agrochemical companies, and that's also resulted in the fact that if you want to grow rapeseed, you have to get a contract first of all from Meggitt, they make the margarine, and then the seed is supplied by one of the seed companies, and it's a little packet in the corner of a large box, and the large box contains all the chemicals you have to apply before Meggitt will accept your crop. So you have to buy a whole packet of gear. You can't buy rapeseed. In fact, just go out and try and buy a bit of sugar beet seed, you can't buy it. Without you buy a whole chemical kit and apply it. One of the chemicals, by the way, in rapeseed is methocystox, which is freely used here. It's a ferocious mutagen, and it's systemic, it's taken up by the plant. So hop into your margarine and mutate. Actually, if you mutate now, you'll beat the rush. This manipulation of market and of finance and of stocks and shares really has put the whole world already into the hands of very few companies whose total turnover is much larger than, say, Australia's total income. Well, we have to fight back. I always think it's very unfair. Just when we learned again to become organic gardeners, we also had to suddenly learn how to save seed, and we weren't seed savers. So we set about carefully learning how to save seed. Just when we learn to save seed, we've got to learn about stocks and shares and markets. And it's extremely unfair for we backyarders to become international bankers and equity financiers, because it's just not what we're accustomed to doing. I mean, I can just see by your faces the whole thing's rather appalling to you. But you too can become an international banker. 4 years ago in the United States, I sat down on a log with a banker who'd retired, and said, how do we go about financing our own systems? How about we start to buy out what we need? And he said, well, you write a charter and I'll set up some systems. So I wrote a charter for a thing called the Earth Bank, which I invented on the spot, which is a copyrighted name. Carl Wien, his name was, said, well, I'll start by setting up a federal credit union, which he did. And then we formed Earth Bank associations to research ways in which we might direct our miserable pennies into ethical groups of people. And almost all the stock market is offering fairly straight up unethical investment. That is, they're companies who do not have any statement of goodwill anywhere in their foundation documents. And when our charter said that we won't invest in companies or products which are made under dictatorial regimes or regimes that use torture as a method, nor will we invest in companies involved in atomic warfare or atomic armaments, or indeed primarily in armaments of any type, nor in companies that don't treat with their employees fairly or pay fair wages, and, well, several other things that you can probably think of yourself. Companies that make chlorinated hydrocarbons for agriculture, or that make addictive substances, we won't take shares in those. And that knocks out almost all the stock market. Almost all the companies traded publicly do one, and companies that knowingly pollute the environment where people live. And there's hardly any companies left. That is, all our own wealth, and in this room there is a very considerable wealth, an amazing amount of money, all that money is given over to banks and insurance companies, and they place it right there on the stock market. You contributed towards the 20 million hectare clearing of West Australia by insuring with AMP. And many of you insure with AMP, and many of you work in institutions whose policy is to insure with AMP. Now, you probably went down there waving placards at some stage, or maybe you didn't, maybe you just felt distressed that the West Australian flora was wiped off the face of the earth. It's the richest arid land flora in the world. We'll never see anything like it again. It's the only place in the world where we can hope to get new products for drylands. The best crop we ever had was on that country before we put wheat in. And look at it, the disaster that wheat has become and is becoming, both to the people on the land and in a sense to the economy of this country. So we didn't have any say about that. And it's because we're what I call passive investors. We just have a little bank account for the ANZ, and so does many groups like peace groups. And the ANZ does all the uranium mining for us. So while you're going up the road waving your cardboard placard, they've got you a few thousand or sometimes many thousands of dollars in there mining uranium. So we started by finding, we were lucky to find in New York two stockbrokers who worked for the Quaker people, who had a few ethical, the Society of Friends have 8 or 10 ethical points. They won't support the armaments trade, or repressive regimes, or people who don't deal with their employees in a fair way. 3 or 4 points. But they had some stockbrokers, and they had some modest investment, a few million dollars, out in companies which these stockbrokers had managed to locate. So we started, first of all, to take equity in some of the firms held by their stockbrokers. Then we did a lot more research and found other firms, and we also set up community enterprise loans trusts, that is, small funding systems within communities by which a lot of us put our money together, and we start to build the small industries and businesses that we'd really like to see, and we start to produce the small products that we can't get that we would like to get. A pretty typical example of that is one operating in the northeast of the United States, where we were able to fund biodynamic farmers into processing natural yogurts for people who couldn't eat anything with additives in. And a lot of cow's milk has high concentration of chemicals. And we sold the yogurt before we finished the factory. That is, Food cooperatives and hospitals bought out the whole lot of it. Recently, two rabbis arrived in Tasmania and bought the entire product of organic apples for juicing for the Jewish community of Sydney. Although what they're not resistant to, I don't know. But it means that we can't get an organic apple in our own state anymore. There's absolutely no problem, there has been none at all, in selling the products of the systems that we generate. There's also been no problem in getting money. When we made up several ethical investment groups, many of them locally, but what I hope to do in Perth is to leave a small body of people determined to set up a small investment company and start to look at what Perth people want and who will do it for them and what talents are in Perth that we can fund. When I left the United States about 2 years ago, the consortium of these groups, brokers, community revolving funds, our own small credit unions, and some other weird situations I might tell you about in a minute, were handling $1.6 billion. And $1.6 billion is an awful lot of money. But by the 10th of November this year, we're just going past $60 billion. And that would cover the national debt of Britain and Australia and a few other countries. And that's all in ethical finance systems, and it's all from very ordinary people. At any one time, between our insurance and ordinary bank accounts, the few hundred dollars we have, in mass, we have a huge capital power. And although the multinationals have to pay us because we have to buy their products, we don't have to give the money back. We can put it into one of our own systems. So they really don't stand much chance as long as enough of us set up our own financial system. At the low level, when Bob Hawke had his economic summit, to which he called the trade unions and the business people, we had our little alternative economic summit, to which we called some organic gardening societies and wilderness groups and so on. None of them came, but luckily 10 hippies came, as usual. In the end, we've got to depend on the hippie, it seems. And of these 10 hippies who left, that was 15 months ago, went home somewhere to the wilds of Waitalaba or out of Sydney, each set up an innovative investment system. And had we brought the Wilderness Society and the Organic Gardening Society, I doubt if they'd have set up an innovative investment system. So maybe we call a hippie meeting every year. And the sort of thing they did were very simple things. One chap went home to a valley in which only 26 people lived. He said to them, look, we're all banking ANZ, and we're all banking in different accounts. I wonder how much money we have. What if we just all put it in one account and see? And they had $28,000 hidden under their pillows and saved up for their next motorbike and money they didn't declare, probably from the illegal sale of green materials or something. So then they put their heads together and said, well, what will we do with all this money? And I said, well, we're paying a lot for bread, let's build a bakehouse. So for about $3,500, they built a baker's oven and a bakehouse and started baking their bread. So two of them were no longer unemployed, they were bakers. And then they said, all right, now we're putting too much money out for food, let's build a shop, buy wholesale and set up a cooperative. So they did that. And what else was there to do? Well, we were paying out a lot for car repairs, so they built a garage and a repair shop. And that was all done in 5 months by 26 hippies. And then I said, what else? And I said, we don't want anything else. So they collapsed the fund and redistributed the money. And by then they had a lot more money than they'd started with, because the thing was paying back a fair percentage from their own businesses. But they could set it up again at the drop of a hat. If they thought they wanted a town hall or something like that, they could build it. Now, a town hall would be a very senseless thing to build, because it wouldn't pay them back very well, but they could build a small teaching institute or whatever they wish. So that's at one level. Another person went home, Jill Jordan from Mullaney, and she had started a food co-op some years before, and she went home and announced to the co-op people, this is now a credit union and a co-op. And Jill's just gone up past $250,000, and almost everybody who wants to grow organic or set up markets can be funded from that credit union at Mullaney, and it's resulted in a very strong support of organic growers and farmers in the total district with a good market output and some capital to come and get before you start. That is, if you like, you can build your chook house and buy all your hens and put in your free-range plants and have all your eggs pre-sold and get on with the job straight away instead of hanging around there for 5 years, you know, scrounging at the tip for old posts and unrolling rusty netting and so on. So it enables people to develop into action very quickly. And at the next level, one other chap who had been studying to be a Roman Catholic priest and abandoned it before I saw him, I didn't have any influence on him, because he thought there were other useful things to do as well. He went home and he started a little company called August Investments, and I have some of his forms outside. August Investments is, again, entirely innovative. He simply registered a company which cost $450 or $500, and he put up the purpose of the company was to invest. And then he said to all of us, lend me some money. So we all lend the company some money. So then he takes our loans to his company and invests them. And he's enabled us to buy, well now, many thousands of dollars worth of shares in good small companies, to fund a lot of new enterprises, to support people in sensible endeavours. And a lot of us around him try and research how these are going to go. Also put as an objective of the company, objective number 11, that when the funds reached $40,000, which I just screamed past a while ago, he would set up Pucker Legal Property Trust. And that will enable us to buy large properties, to develop them, and to settle our own sort of people on them in the right sort of places with the right sort of services, with their water and a lot of their energy services and decently designed homes, and also to provide them with their own banking systems and schools. So we're entering a new phase, and we've done it all in about 18 months in Australia and 3 years worldwide. So let me assure you that you really do have your own fate in your own hands, and I hope that a few of you might stay behind for even a quarter of an hour after I finish lecturing and tell me you're going to take part in December Investment Company of Perth. Because in Perth, you rather like living in Tasmania. It'd be handy if Tasmania was off Perth, because we do lead isolated lives. We have to pay to get out and pay to get in. And to come from home to here and back costs me about $1,000, and costs you the same to go to the eastern states and come home. So we're a bit cut off. And an investment company in Sydney, as good as it is, although it enables us to buy shares in other good companies, and they could be in West Australia, really isn't suited to running systems in Perth. And it's the people of Perth who should be running those systems. And they know which companies serve them well, they know which companies meet the criteria, and they know what sort of things they need to set up. And you need to set up an organic growers market. You desperately need to set up an organic growers market, and you need to set up a set of offices within it for various organisations which have no office space and where we can't go. It should be a one-stop place where you can come in with a few cases of product with your name on it, set your price. It should be graded as to how you've grown it, and that's fairly easily done. Some people use minimal pesticides, others use zero. So you need a set of grades. The growers should be registered with the co-op and guarantee their product. The co-op can, and often, or always does in New Zealand, test product for residual chemicals. But sometimes we have a lot of chemicals in product where we didn't intend to. And if you're listening to a talkback program on radio the other morning, a woman rang in, she gardens organically, she bought an old orchard that hadn't been used for 14 years, she free-ranged the chickens, she tested her eggs, and she had inedible eggs. They were full of dieldrin, and they probably will be for the next 40 years. And she can't feed them to her family, and she can't sell them. And we've poisoned a lot of this country. We've poisoned so much of the United States, we've destroyed 40% of the groundwater, and almost all the farms that have been under commercial intensive use are quite useless to us because none of the products from them achieve any better than 3 or 4 times the minimum pollution that the World Health Organization would like to see us eating. Therefore, even with the best of intentions on some land, we can't offer poison-free products. And dieldrin is a pretty rotten sort of thing to be eating. And there's a famous fact that the highest levels of DDT measured in history is in the breast milk of West Australian women. And that still stands, as far as I know. And I think you're still using DDT over here too. So, got to buy a way out of this. I became a very unwilling financial organiser. However, I personally don't trust myself to handle money, nor does anybody who knows me. It's always dropping out of my pocket. And I always get home with paper in this hand, some money in this hand, and it doesn't ever match up. So they have strict instructions on not to touch money at all. But what I do is to go around and help people set up these systems. There's a very fine system running in New Zealand called KELT, the Community Enterprise Loans Trust System. It's in every small town. It's the sort of thing that we must imitate and that we should get a couple of people over from New Zealand. We'd have to pay their fares and we'd have to pay them a fair week's wage. They're like me, they don't do anything else but travel and do these things, and set up a Community Enterprise Loans Trust program here, because KELD, rather like our Earth Bank system, the first trouble we strike is about a year after you start, and that is you have much too much money. What are you going to do with it? It's quite a problem. So we have to find other people to trade off money to who are starting up and able to get it in good systems, because we can't handle tremendous amount of capital without wasting some. So we have, the stock market wastes almost all of it. You know, you can see many million or billion dollar investments around here on which there's no hope of return to the investor. And the only way the banks make out is by constantly inflating the value of money. So these are all areas in which we've had to unwillingly tread. We should be setting up open pollinated seed companies which serve local seed needs, and which the seed is not owned, it's not patented seed. We should be setting up our own organic gardeners and farmers. We've got many, many farmers and small farmers who can't make a living serving the international commodity market. At the same time, we have absolutely no product available to us locally that I would care to eat. I dislike leaving home because I know I'm going to be on rotten food all the way out and all the way back. It's only when you're leaking out of your own garden and you know that garden's good that you can actually trust it. The other thing we've been setting up as individuals and groups are farm link systems. It's fairly obvious that somebody in town, particularly if they live in a fairly repressive council area, won't be able to keep their own chooks, won't be able to milk their cow, won't be able to grow their firewood, while at the same time 7,000 Australian farmers, or West Australian farmers specifically, are having to walk off their farms because they can't sell wheat. And there's an obvious way to move, and that is for as few as 30 to 40 households to form a link to as few as one farm. Now, the income from 40 households is a very large farm income if the farm can supply firewood, a basic food, and a small amount of mixed vegetables. And any farmer can do that for 40 households on about 10 acres, not 10,000 acres. And then the city people can co-invest with the farmer in more extensive firewood plantations. Because as the price of firewood reaches and goes past $70, on our best analyses, we expect a per acre income of $4,000 per acre per annum for firewood when it reaches $70 a tonne, and in Adelaide it just went past $150 a tonne, and it's going to well up about $400 a tonne in a very few years. So now's the time to form a little energy investment group, find your farmer, get your 2 acres of firewood in, give him a good ground rent, and he'd think $100 an acre was marvellous, sign a long-term contract with him as a group, and start to produce your own energy systems. And precisely the same, any farmer out there working biodynamically can produce all the grain you'll need. Any farmer out there can run your chickens. You own 20 chickens and you pay him to run them, therefore he doesn't own any chickens himself, otherwise he's in trouble. But any of you can own a flock of chickens on leased land on a farm, and the farmer will probably collect the eggs for you under contract and send them into town. And you can test them, and if that's okay, that's okay. This woman said to me, "What do I do with my orchard?" And she had 34. I said, "Turn it into firewood, the trees, and also plant firewood, and then keep on testing every few years to see if the dieldrin is being removed as we remove firewood, because I believe it probably could be." So there are a lot of people out there really stuck, and a lot of people in here really stuck. No real security in town, no real assurance of any real future, both in the country and in town. And it's time for us as a people to start to define what we want, what sort of future we want, to quietly start to fund that, and we can do it very rapidly, to get a list of farmers who will work with us, and I'm sure we can get that very rapidly, and a list of townspeople who want to make that transition with farmers. And I'm sure that would happen rapidly too. Apart from that, we go on as usual in our home gardens, in which I grow most of my green crop, but can't grow any animal products or firewood. And we try to cooperate a little better in groups, because we haven't been doing it at all, and when we do it, we tend to sit down and squabble about stupid things, about whether we eat meat or not, instead of getting down to basic facts as to whether we have a future or not. And I think it's time to stop squabbling about stupid things, which none of us do we? I don't think we do, no. And we cooperate towards good things. We've long ago ceased networking, and we've long ago started to work net. That is, if somebody's not doing anything, they don't have any say. And if you complain about something, you fix it, and after a while you get no complaints. You want to complain about something? You fix it. the world is full of people who want to direct other people to tell them what to do, but they don't want to do it. And we've cast them out. And we break up all work into small groups of 1 to 3 people who are going to do it. If they don't do it, the job's vacant. Nobody else has any say in that particular operation. So you want a few small groups of 3 people determined to do something, and we'll take Perth over in a few years. And we can stop all the high rise, because it depends on us running our insurance and running our banking system. We don't want any more high rise, because it's created a huge traffic problem, an enormous external debt to Australia, and it's crowded our cities out, and we've overbuilt our roads, because everybody has to come into the middle of town to work. And we know full well, If we fund people into small computer systems and link up, everyone can stay home and do everything that happens in an insurance company sitting in the kitchen. Because we run most of our financial systems from kitchens. You want to know where the share program runs from? It's in a cardboard box under a housewife's kitchen in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And it's a very big financial program. We don't need banks to do banking. We need a few people who can tot up figures. Sitting just where they are. Why don't we have a small break and walk around, talk a little bit. You ask me some questions for a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes. I don't want anybody leaving at any time. I would have left a long time ago. And then those who are really interested to set up a small system, we'll sit down for a while, maybe another quarter of an hour later, and someone will put down all our names and we'll be contacted, because there'll be an action group on. So a lot of people aren't getting out of here without they commit to action. I was sick of talking. We talked for a long time. Trials on any property of firewood species, but a lot of them have been trialled throughout Australia, and both the Forestry Commission and other sensible people have a lot of good ideas. One thing that will grow very well as a pioneer plant in West Australia is the is Tagasasti, which is a Canary Island tree loosen, and that's a very good pioneer tree in which you can plant almost any other form of tree, and it's very drought tolerant, seeds readily available, it's a good browse, and the seed was worth $60 a kilogram a few months ago, went up from 40 a few months before that, so it seeds in the first and second years, and there are a whole lot of eucalypts, of which 46 are endemic over here, so I wouldn't even pretend to recommend them to you, except that your own endemic red gum, river red gum, which is Eucalyptus camalogilensis from Willuna, has proved to have the highest firewood yield in trials in Alice Springs, and that's the Willuna variety of E. camalogilensis. So you'll find quite a lot of fast-growing eucalypts. The idea with camalogilensis, and indeed with Tagasasti, is you put in a mixed plantation for trial, a few acres is enough, that you cut them as soon as they're 2 to 4 inches stem diameter, which in the case of Tagasasti is about 3 years, and camalogilensis 6 years, they're up about 6 inch diameter. And you cut them right off the butt, and they coppice, that is, they throw out 3 to 4 more shoots, and these then reach maturity in about 2 years. But broadly speaking, you're cutting a quarter of your plantation every year from year 4 on. So it doesn't take very long, and we can drill this at broad scale with machinery, Tagasasti. We've been doing it very successfully, and any of the fast-growing wattles we can drill with broad-scale machinery. And that means there's a demand for bulk seed. So we have to get seed growers and seed collectors, and then there's more money in that area too. In New Zealand, 3 months ago, with a farmer who was drilling 100 acres, and myself, a member of the Permaculture Association, we went out with a small shaker in the back of a utility, and we shook $8,000 worth of seed out of about 10 trees in the morning. So there's all these exciting and interesting and rewarding occupations attached to self-reliance. And then in the Tagasastis we've found better and worse firewood trees. So there's lots of interesting and exciting things to do in selecting our species, in working out our techniques for soils. And in every case, every 2 acres should be, I feel, tied to an urban family who don't need 2 acres of firewood, but who get an partial income, pay a ground rent to a farmer who's gone broke, and have an involvement in the country. We set up a lot of farm link systems. If you've got 2 acres of firewood out with a farmer, you probably have a picnic area in the middle of it and a little tent space, and go and admire your plantation and clean it up occasionally. You can get your 2 acres easily for a ground rent of $300 a year, and okay, it's real nice if you've got $8,000 back in year 4, or if you've got $6,000 back in year 4 in your firewood, that'd be real nice too. So I think the thing is to try and involve the city with the country people, because both are in trouble. Any other questions really pressing on your mind, apart from the why your lemon tree leaves are going yellow? Camalogilensis, it's your river red gum. That river red gum grows almost all over Australia, and it's the Willuna variety, which has very narrow leaves, just like a peppermint, which is really outpacing a lot of other eucalypts, 60 other eucalypts in trials at Alice Springs. There they're using sewage water, and in the new settlement at Ayers Rock, the sewage water grows 1,500 hectares, I think it is, of firewood on drip line from the town sewage. That is, the sewage water of a town is sufficient to fully fuel any town. And in fact, if you're not using it as individual fuels, production from sewage waters provides 60% of the total energy of any town. We've been busy designing sewage tree farms for quite a while, and getting very good results out of them. That's river red gum, Eucalyptus camalogilensis.